I know sometimes sports analogies throw people off, and I know as I relate to it easy because I've watched it my entire life. In baseball, it's interesting. In football and basketball and in other sports, they call the coach a coach. But in baseball, it's called a manager, and I've never really put a lot of thought into that until this week as I was thinking about it. There was a guy that played baseball for the Detroit Tigers back in the 80s and parts of the 90s by the name of Alan Trammell, and he's actually put into the Hall of Fame a couple of years ago. So obviously a very good player, had over 2,300 hits. So Alan Trammell is not only one of the best Detroit Tigers of all time, he's one of the best players ever played Major League Baseball of all time. But then he was called to be their manager for 3 years. And, you know, if you hit 300 in baseball, you can get to the Hall of Fame. But if you win at a 300 clip, you're going to get fired. In other words, for every 10 games that he managed, he only won three of them. And he's got one of the worst managerial records in the history of baseball. I don't say that to pick on him. I just, as looking this stuff up, it kind of come to my attention because I loved Alan Trammell as a kid. I remember watching him and Lou Whitaker play together, and I thought, I didn't realize that his managing record was that bad. Now, there's a lot of things that go into that. Obviously, it could have been, you know, just because you lose as a coach don't mean sometimes it's you don't have talent, sometimes they don't gel together. But the bottom line is it comes back to the manager. It comes back to the person that runs things, and that's what the manager does. You see, as a player, Alan Trammell's responsible just for his own abilities. He's responsible just for getting hits and fielding. And in a sense, baseball is a very individualistic sport because you can go to the plate on your own and you can get a hit and you can be stranded and you can do that three times a game and you're considered very successful and your team can never win. But as an individual, you're considered successful. As a manager, that's not considered success. So he managed the team and they didn't win. Well, above the manager in baseball is what they have. It's called a general manager. He's, in fact, in charge of not only the 25 players, which the manager's in charge of. He's in charge of ticket sales, and he's in charge of all these things that run the everyday operations. But neither one of those managers own the team. The general manager doesn't own the team, and the manager doesn't own the team. You see, I'll just give you one that a lot of you have heard of. New York Yankees are owned by the Steinbrenner family. For years, it was George, the dad. Then they had some problems, obviously. The son-in-law was supposed to be next in line. There was a divorce. So now, you know, one of the sons runs the team. But the Steinbrenners own the Yankees. The general manager, Brian Cashman, doesn't own the Yankees. He runs the everyday operations. And the manager is in charge of the 25. They are managing the assets of the Steinbrenner family. They have the power and the authority to fire the manager and the general manager anytime. Why? Because they own the team. As Christians, this is the mindset as disciples that we have to get into. We are managers of God's resources. We don't own anything. And the problem, and we talked about it a little bit in Sunday school, the problem with the mindset with many Christians is we think we own our money, we think we own our time, we think we own our abilities, but God is in complete control. He owns all of this. And when we surrender our life to Christ, if we in fact do that, then we're saying that here is your, all of this is that, you know, I thought was mine is yours. Now just help me to manage it effectively. In the Bible, this was a concept that was kind of easily understood because there were a lot of household stewards. That word means manager. In other words, they were a slave. They didn't own anything. And they understood that their job, this is what Joseph did in the Old Testament, Genesis, their job was to manage what the owner had. And they didn't own anything. Now, there were, before we read this parable, I want you to understand there was a lot of absent landlords back then. In other words, it's kind of like feudalism in a sense. People owned a lot of things, but if they own property here and they own property over there, they may not be at this property. So they had a manager manage these accounts while they may be living in their winter quarters somewhere else. So when Jesus tells this parable, it's easily understood for people of their day. The parable of the shrewd manager, Luke 16, Jesus told his disciples, there was a rich man whose manager was accused of wasting his possessions. So he called him in and asked him, "What is this I hear about you? Give an account. You cannot be my manager any longer." The manager said to himself, "What shall I do now? My master has taken away my job. I am not strong enough to dig, and I'm ashamed to beg. I know what I'll do so that when I lose my job here, people will welcome me into their houses. So he called in each one of his master's debtors. He asked the first, how much do you owe my master? 800 gallons of olive oil, he replied. The manager told him, take your bill, sit down quickly, make it 400. And then he asked the second, and how much do you owe? 1,000 bushels of wheat, he replied. He told him, take your bill, make it 800. The master commended the dishonest manager because he had acted shrewdly, for the people of this world are more shrewd in dealing with their own kind than that of the people of light. Now, let's pause for a second, because this is a kind of a tough text. It's almost like the one last week. If you read it on the surface, you think, I don't really get Jesus is commending him for being a little bit dishonest here. In fact, when we read this, it seems like everybody in the parable is a little bit dishonest, even the owner. You've got the manager who we've seen who has mismanaged affairs. And so then he goes to these people and he says, hey, what do you owe? 800. He goes, write me out a bill for 500. All right, let's make that even. And so these people had to know, hey, what I'm doing is probably not on the up and up, but hey, whatever, it cuts my debt in half. It's kind of like all these bill collectors call you and say, hey, you owe 20,000. How about you only pay 10? I can make that happen. You're like, well, this sounds too good to be true. I spent the 20. I borrowed the 20. I should pay back the 20. And so, but then we even get the owner who says, he commends him. And so when you read this, you're thinking, does Jesus, because Jesus is not the owner, but is he commending the owner for this guy's dishonesty? So before we go any further, let's clear up a few things. First of all, you have to understand that this is a parable. And I've told you before, when we read the Bible, everything doesn't read the same. You've got books of wisdom. You've got books of prophecy. You've got stories. You've got metaphors. You've got when Jesus speaks. And this is Jesus speaking here. Don't get me wrong, but Jesus is telling a parable. What is a parable? A parable is a story with at least one main point to it, and sometimes more than that. So everything in the story doesn't have to be true or make sense for it to add up, but Jesus is driving home a point here. So understand that when you say this, oh, Jesus is commending dishonor, that's not what he's doing here. We'll get to the point in a minute, but the parable is what we need to understand. Now, let's read the rest of this. I tell you, use worldly wealth to gain friends for yourself so that when it is gone, you will be welcomed into eternal dwellings. That can, again, be a little bit confusing. Whoever can be trusted with very little can also be trusted with much. Whoever is dishonest with very little will also be dishonest with much. So if you've not been trustworthy in handling worldly wealth, who will trust you with true riches? And if you've not been trustworthy with someone else's property, who will give you property of your own? No servant can serve two masters. Either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. So what is Jesus trying to teach us here? First of all, we are managers of everything that's his. That's the first thing that we should look at. We have to get out of this mindset that this is my money. We have to get out of the mindset that, man, I give 10%, the other 90% is mine. That's not, nowhere in the Bible does it say that. Everything that we have belongs to God. So we can tithe. We can give to missions. You think, oh, I'm good. No, the rest of it's God's as well. And you say, but that's not fair. Look, we have to get out of this, again, the mindset of thinking that we know what's best for ourselves. When we surrender everything to Christ, we are saying, I give it all to you, my money, my time, my talents, all that stuff, the gospel, everything I will do, I will manage what you have given me. Remember, God gives some of us more. That means you may be called to give more. You may have more time. That means you may need to give more time. But we are managers. That's the first thing that God wants us to get here. The second thing is this, is that Jesus isn't praising dishonesty. He's praising the guy, or the owner's praising the guy, for making the most of the opportunity he had. Think about it. This guy's been fired. Again, we don't know for sure that most landowners would think like this. Maybe he thought, well, they weren't going to pay me anyway. But the guy at least was shrewd enough. What does it say? The people of this world have more sense when it comes to this. You ever thought like that when you walked off a car lot? And you're like, man, I just got had. That's because you're not equipped to deal with most car salesmen. They do it every day. I'm not picking on car salesmen. Any salesman, I guess, that sells things. And you get the call and they try to trick you and all this stuff and you leave and you're thinking, man, I just don't feel real good about that. You ever got the bad end of a business deal? If you're a child of God, basically what this is saying is that we ought to be so liberal in our giving, not just waste it, but that we ought to be so liberal that we don't think like people of this world. We don't scheme and plot to make more money. And so Jesus is not praising him for his dishonesty, but the guy made the most of a bad situation. What did he do? He said, hey, I'm about to get fired. All these people that owe money, I'll cancel their debts in half. And then they'll say, hey, won't you come manage my money? Or won't you come be one of my friends? The guy made the most of an opportunity. That's what Jesus is saying that we do with money. We make the most of the opportunity we have. Look at verse 9. I tell you, worldly wealth, use worldly wealth to gain friends for yourself. So that's when it's gone, you'll be welcomed into eternal dwellings. That's the next thing that Jesus is wanting us to get. We use wealth. And you say, how do we use wealth to gain friends for yourself so that when it is gone, you'll be, what does that mean? It means this, that our wealth, we should view it, not again as ours, but it is that God's letting us use it so that we can gain influence with people or even use it just for the kingdom. In other words, let me try to make a little bit better sense to you on this. You got money, then buy somebody's lunch. Again, people very rarely turn down free lunches. You got money, minister to people. You got plenty of money sitting around, sponsor somebody to go on a mission trip. You got money that is sitting around, give it to missions. You see, it's not just about gaining friends and doing things for them, but it's also about using your money to further the kingdom. When we give to missions, we talked about this in discipleship this morning. When we give to missions, people come to know Jesus through that money. If you think about it in this sense, the gospel can be advanced, but it can't be advanced without money. And people say, now wait a minute. It doesn't take any money to read the Bible. There are places in the world that don't have Bibles. How do they get Bibles? Money. People like us give money. Bibles are printed, Bibles are shipped, Bibles are given out. It takes gas money to take Bibles up into these remote villages. Everything requires effort. Everything requires money. But it's not just that. And that's the simplest term. There are places that we go in Guatemala that don't have running water, that don't have electricity. Now, we're not going to be able to take electricity to them, but they don't have meals. They don't have things like that. When the missionaries that we support on the ground are able to go in there and minister to them, and give them food and give them clothing, give them shelter, give them good clean water, don't you think they're more apt to listen to them as they present the gospel? You see, that's what Jesus is talking about here. He says, use your money to gain friends, to do things that will get you rewards in heaven. And then another thing is this, where he goes on to say in verse 11, so if you have not been trustworthy in handling worldly wealth, who will trust you with true riches? In other words, and Jesus says it here. Now, by the way, money is not evil. It's not good. It's not evil. It's what we do with it that makes it that way. But Jesus says, if you can't be trusted with your wealth, if you can't be trusted to give some to the church, if you can't be trusted to give some to your community or your neighbors or the missions and all those things, if you can't be trusted with that, then what makes you think I can trust you with the kingdom? What makes you think I can trust you to tell people about Jesus? What makes you think I can trust you with all these things where you reap all these blessings? Because I'm going to tell you right now, there's really no greater joy in life than leading somebody to Jesus and seeing it and seeing the people just change and seeing them live it and knowing that God used you as a part of that. But God said, if I can't trust you with this money, then how can I trust you with the keys to the kingdom? And see, that's the point of all of it. Now, we talked about this a little bit, and again this morning. But I don't look at names. I don't see things like that. But Mandy told me last week, she said, hey, we got a $2,200 check for missions. I was like, what? I was like, we didn't even. And she's like, oh, no, half of it went to Slam, half of it went to Save a Life. And I said, wow. I was like, I guess it was a person that's been. And she's like, no, they've never been. And so as I think about that, this person is doing exactly what they should do. They're investing money into missions. They're sending $1,100 goes a long way in Guatemala. It goes a long way in Guatemala. And what they were doing exactly what Jesus said here. They've been trustworthy in handling worldly wealth so that they will be able to be trusted with true riches. And then Jesus goes on to say down here, you can't serve two masters. Either he will hate the one and love the other, or he'll be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. Now, let's get to the crux of the matter here. First of all, I know a lot of you, when I start talking money, you tune me out. And I know a lot of you will be going to your lunch today and saying, that's all he talks about. It's not all I talk about. But Jesus talked about it a pretty good bit, and he's talking about it here. First of all, let me share a couple of things with you. Number one, I will be held accountable for what I teach all of you. I don't want you on Judgment Day to go, I didn't know about all that. If you're at Danville Baptist any amount of time, I want you to understand that you are called to understand that we are held to a certain standard when it comes to money. The first thing is, I think we all have to get our mindsets right that we're managers. It's so much easier when we realize that. It's so much easier to say, well, I don't own it. All I can do is play. You know, Alan Trammell could have said that. I didn't set this team. I just did what the general manager gave me, and he only did what the owner allowed him to spend. There's no salary cap in baseball, so if you want to spend $800 million, you can, but our owner didn't want to spend that, so if you'd give me some more money, it's easy to say that. And some of you are thinking right now, I don't make a lot of money. A couple of things. Number one, God may not can trust you with a lot. He couldn't trust me to be a millionaire. I know that. That's why, and I pray what Proverbs says, I don't want poverty or wealth. Because I don't want to be poor, but I can't be trusted with wealth. Okay? But you have to understand that Jesus, the reason Jesus talked about this so much is because he knew our hearts. It's what we love. It's what we cling to. And some of you, it's not the fact that your 401k rolls over. It's the fact that you just want it to spend. And you want more pleasure out of it. And we want all the things that we want. So understand this, that I'm not beating up on you. My philosophy is not this. I could stand up here and tell you you're living in sin if you're not tithing, because technically you are, okay? That's not the what I want to do. I want you to understand, first of all, this, that I'm called to teach you this biblical truth. I could give you 50 verses on teachers and how we're held to a different standard and how I'm going to be held accountable for what I teach you. The second thing is this. Don't ever think that I teach this because I want a raise or because we need more. Because if you give me, and look, I won't turn down a raise, but if you give me a raise, I'm just going to spend it on something stupid probably, okay? So it's not that I want to be paid $200,000 to preach at Danville Baptist Church so I can be rich, okay? That's not why I do it. I don't do it so we can do more nice things, even though we have done some nice things here with the buildings. That's not why we do it. The reason I want us to teach this is, number one, you are going to be held accountable for it. As a disciple, as a follower of Jesus, you will be held accountable for what you did with God's resources that you give. It's all in here. And then the second thing is, it's just more fun when we all do it together and we can do a lot more. We were talking about mission offering last week. I told somebody, this is true, we wouldn't have to take up the mission offering if everybody in here actually gave 10%. We wouldn't. We would have to say, hey, we need to give some to some more missions if everybody actually gave 10%. Here's what I want you to know. Yesterday at our house, we had a little bit of a issue because we're humans, and it was kind of funny. I don't think I'll embarrass too many people. I woke up yesterday before Lori, and I got up, and one of our children had set up late and destroyed the house, and it was like, wow. Orange peelings under the couch cushions and just everything. I thought, this is going to be good when Lori gets up. And I know a lot of you are thinking, why didn't you do something about it? Well, we kind of split roles there. Here's the thing. When I prayed for a wife, I wanted two things. I wanted a good-looking wife and somebody kept a clean house, and I got that. In my opinion, I like a clean house. I'm just not very good at doing, but I do help her. But I don't always have the initiative. So we have these things, like I do the cooking, and honestly, and she cleans the house, and we help each other out with that. So house and homework are kind of her thing. And so it was just fun to see her kind of light into one of our children because they just... But here's the funny thing, though, is, and she was telling the truth. Now, she could have told our child that, I'm just making you do this because you get on my nerves. She could have, but she honestly told our child, I'm trying not to use personal pronouns. She told our child why she does that. And she was telling the truth. She said, look, I do this because I love you. Because a couple of things you need to learn. Number one, you need to learn teamwork. That me and your dad aren't the only ones that have to clean the house. You're old enough to do your part now. If you can mess it up that bad, you can clean it up. So you need to learn to be a good teammate. Number two, when and if you get married, your spouse will kill you if you act like this. Okay? You need to learn that. And then number three, just take some personal responsibility. Just look, if you mess it up, clean it up. And then the last point was this, and it was true. She said, look, I wouldn't tell you this if I didn't love you. I really wouldn't. She said, because it'd be easy for me to just do it myself, but then you're going to be that messy person that nobody wants to be on a team with. You're not going to have any personal responsibility. Your spouse is not going to want to be with you. Your friends aren't going to hang out with you. They're not going to want to ride in a car with you. All this stuff. She said, I'm doing this honestly because I love you and you need to just work on this. And it conveyed. Here's the point to all this. As Christians, as believers, as disciples, we ought to hold each other accountable in this. And I'm held again accountable for what I teach you. So as it's kind of like I'm Lori, I have to tell you this stuff. But here's what I want you to know. I don't stand up here to tell you to beat you up. I tell you this because if we do it together, we can do A, a lot more, and B, it's just more fun. It just is. When we go on mission trips, we grow more together than we do anything in Guatemala. When we go to the boys' ranch and I mess up paint on the walls, I have more fun spending time with our people than I do messing up paint on the walls because we're just growing together. So why do we do this? We do it because Jesus commanded it. Now, let me give you some practical stuff, and I'm done. This isn't a typical sermon in this regard. And in fact, I'll speak to people in here in a moment on that, but let me just give you some practical advice. The first thing you've got to do is ask God to change your heart, honestly. Because this sermon that I preach is not going to be like, oh, he's right. I'm changing everything I do. I know better than that. What you got to do is ask God to help you see things the way he sees them. Look, I'm not standing up here today to tell you I'm perfect. I've been convicted on this week. There's a lot of monthly things that I'm about to take out of our lives that add up. Little bitty bills, $14 bills, $12 bills, $8 bills, things like that reoccur on our checking account that we're going to take out. But you got to ask God to see things how he sees them. You got to say, God, I need help seeing that I'm a manager, that this isn't mine. And as a manager, how do you want me to manage these assets the best way that you've given me? Now look, I'm not saying God doesn't want you to go on a vacation. I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying he probably doesn't want you going on 10. I'm just being honest. I'm not saying God doesn't want you to live in a decent house. But if all you think about is fixing that house and renovating that house and doing things to the house, then maybe you need to calm down on that. I'm not saying God doesn't want you to wear nice clothes. But if that's all that consumes you, then maybe you need to calm down on that. All I'm saying is we have to get the mindset that God owns all this. And he's telling me what to do with it. So practically speaking, you say that's the first place you start. And then I was talking with Selena this week as she was talking about some of her young people and she was helping them understand the giving process. And I always tell people this. The Bible's scriptural. We're not going to beat this to death. I'm not going to tell you that, but it's scriptural to give 10% and then give above that. That's the starting point for Christians. But I tell young people, don't start with 10%. If you're giving nothing, start with 3%. Sit down and systematically give 3% of your check every week or every month. Then say, God, I've done that. Now help me to get to 5%. Now, God, help me to get to 8%. Help me to get to 10%. And then when you get to 10%, that's your tithe. Then say, now, God, help me to give above and beyond that to missions. And then say, God, I want to have your mindset, and I want to be blessed. So just help me to have that mentality. Now, why do we do all this again? Because this is what disciples do. Just think about it. If all of us had the mindset that, hey, I'm not going to give, church will be fine without me, then how many people would actually be reached for Jesus? We couldn't do donuts with grandparents. We couldn't do Awanas. We couldn't go on mission trips. We couldn't do any of those things if everybody had the mindset that, hey, it's mine, I'll do what I want to with it. But it's when we let go of it and say, hey, I'm going to let go and let God use all 100%. He can get a lot more out of it than I can. That's when we start reaping the blessings of it. Would you stand, please, and bow your heads and close your eyes. And this, let me just say one thing real quickly. If you're here today and you've never made a decision to trust in Jesus, hear me when I say this. All this other stuff comes after that. In fact, you surrender your life to Him. You understand that you're a sinner and you're in need of a Savior. You surrender to Him like we've been talking about the last few weeks. You pick up your cross. You deny yourself and you call out to Him like the tax collector did and said, Lord Jesus, have mercy on me, a sinner. When you do that, at that point's when you say, all right, Lord, I want you to be Lord of all of my life, my finances, my thoughts, everything. But before that, you don't worry. If you're not a believer, then I don't expect your finances to be with a kingdom worldview. So if you're here today and you've never trusted in Jesus, know that one day all of us will stand before a holy God and give an account. And know that you'll do it as well. So if you're here and you've never done that, get it right. And also know this, I don't expect the altar to be full today. Maybe it will be. I know when we preach on this, most people start tuning me out immediately. But know that it's in the Word of God. It is God's Word for us to understand that we are managers of what He give us. Time, our talents, our money, all those things. And He said, if He can't trust us with what we're using, then how can He give us more? Maybe you say, well, I'm struggling. Our budget's kind of tight. Ask God to help you out. Ask God to give you wisdom on how to do that. Start giving. Start letting Him bless you. Danville Baptist doesn't need your money. God doesn't need your money. He can make it just fine without it. But it's a command for you. It's so that you can let go and let God have control of your heart. If you're here this morning, God's spoken to you. You come, the altar will be open, and I'll be down front.